This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny Angola Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Angola Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. Coming up a little bit later in the 4 o'clock hour, we have ESPN senior writer Ryan McGee. We're going to get into the Dan Mullen firing down in Florida, as well as the rest of the college football landscape. But Gojo, we got to start off this segment with the news of the day. Less than 2 years after they hired him, the New York Football Giants have fired offensive coordinator Jason Garrett. They announced this move today, obviously citing the lack of development with Daniel Jones and the overall creativity of the offense. And it felt like this was one of those moves that was clear after the sound bites we got from Joe Judge in the post-game press conference in Tampa, where he said that it's on the coaching staff to put the players in positions to be successful. Clearly, they didn't do that last night. The Giants got bounced by 20. Coming off of a bye week, you thought they would have some semblance of a plan going up against a Tampa Bay team that was struggling, and it was clear that they didn't. So they're going to turn over offensive coordinator slash play calling duties to Freddie Kitchens. We'll see where they go the rest of the way. But Gojo, as a Giants fan, I think this is a good day because the organization has no choice but to face facts that the rebuild has failed, and all the people that they empowered, that they put in their hierarchy, probably need to go.
Yeah, big scorpion and the frog vibes here for getting mad at people for being who they are. Because if you hired Jason Garrett and expected a lot different than what you got, I don't feel like you've been paying attention to Jason Garrett in the last decade. He is a fully formed coach. You know what you are hiring, and yet you still made the hire. So I don't think we're done there in New York, but I think this is a necessary and understandable first step in how they are proceeding. They found out the truth. And you hear in every football organization, every sports team, really, they'll have like kitschy names for different parts of the week here. You know, you've got Successful Sunday, you've got Victory Monday, you've got Working Wednesday, and a lot of places will go with Tell the Truth Tuesday. So we wanted to try and do a little bit of that around here today as we looked at some of the uncomfortable truths that might be facing your favorite NFL team and tried to get a look at them. Our producer, Devin Kane, is back and in the seat and ready to help us dispense some of this truth. Debbie, how are we feeling?
What's up, boys?
You're a Giants fan, so you are in the mood for some harsh truths here.
Yes, I'm always a truth teller when it comes to the Giants.
Did the
sarcasm.
Truth.
Yes. All right, let's start it up. Mike, the Cowboys are in trouble. True or false?
Listen, if I am going to tell the truth on this one, no, I don't think the Cowboys are in trouble here. I mean, you've got everything that you could have hoped for at the start of the season, outside of health in a couple of critical areas. And that is not health that is done for the season in Tyron Smith, your left tackle, in your wide receiver, Amari Cooper, or CeeDee Lamb. Like, those are guys we expect the Cowboys to get back at some point. So, no, Chris, I don't think they're in trouble. I think you've still got Dak Prescott, who has played at times like an MVP this season, and you've got Micah Parsons on the other side doing things as a rookie that we haven't seen since Terrell Suggs from the early 2010s. So I am pretty confident in this team still.
Yeah, you're saying a lot when Micah Parsons is breaking the sack record that DeMarcus Ware had for rookies for the Dallas Cowboys. So, yeah, that's saying a whole lot in terms of what you can expect from him on that side of the ball. And Dak Prescott, outside of the game that we had on Sunday in Arrowhead, has been playing otherworldly this season. So, yeah, I don't think the Cowboys are in trouble. And in a short week against a team that has lost three straight, like, I don't anticipate that the Dallas Cowboys are going to drop two in a row. So, no, the Cowboys aren't in trouble. They're still in. They're well within control of their division. They've got a 3.5-game lead against the Philadelphia Eagles. So the Cowboys will be fine when it comes to their prospects of being able to make the tournament and having a chance to go on a deep playoff run.
All right, Chris, moving on. The Patriots are the best team in the AFC. True or false?
That's true. That is true, my friend. I've said it before. I'll say it again on a week-to-week basis. That is the team that I trust the most, and it has a lot to do with their formula for success, which is their defense being dominating, taking the football away, creating short fields for their offense, and then Mac Jones not losing the game for them, playing within himself and relying on a strong running game, and then picking and choosing their spots for shot plays with play-action passing. So I trust the New England Patriots. They're well-coached. They're not going to beat themselves. They're going to force teams to make mistakes, and they're going to capitalize on them. So, yeah, the New England Patriots, the team that's on a 5-game win streak, yeah, I trust them to be the best team in the AFC, and I actually trust them to actually win their division, the AFC East, a division coming into the seeding season that we wanted to concede to the Buffalo Bills.
They are the best team in the AFC right now. And that is all I can cop to because we know that changes by the week in that conference. I will absolutely say that is the truth at this point where we sit, even though Matthew Judon has terrible taste in macaroni and cheese and McCorkle Jones, a.k.a. Mac Jones, a.k.a. Easy Mac, at quarterback is denying pie's place on the Thanksgiving table. Their food takes stink, but they're pretty damn consistent on the field, and you got to respect that.
All right, Mike, the Browns need to shut down Baker Mayfield, true or false?
Yeah, I've actually thought about this one for a while, and I think this is telling the truth here, Chris. Based on the juncture we're at right now, nothing good has come from him being on the field. I understand if you're Baker, it's a contract year. You want to continue to show everyone how tough you are. You have loudly proclaimed your shoulder injury so that everyone understands what we're working with. But it's hurting the team. He's not able to capitalize in key areas for a team right now that is, when it's less than 100% up front with its identity on the ground game with that running back room, cannot be sustained or aided by Baker Mayfield. And now that frustration's starting to boil over in his comments about the fan base and what we've seen post from his significant other talking about the team's toughness. None of this is productive for your franchise going forward for a guy who you still have control of going into next season. So I think it'd be smart for them to shut him down. Understand that this is not going to be the season you hoped it was, and prioritize health and sanity from here on out.
Yeah, if shutting him down means shutting his wife's social media accounts down, then I'm all for the move. Because nothing good came from what Emily Mayfield did on Sunday night in trying to defend her husband's toughness by taking a shot at the rest of the team's toughness. Like, that just doesn't make any sense. And that's not becoming of a franchise quarterback. And for an organization that lived this movie in terms of family members taking shots at players that are on the team, like, I'm pretty sure that Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski want to move past that at some point, because that infects your culture and that moves the Cleveland Browns to a place that they spent the better part of the last two decades in. So they don't want to be in a position where they're repeating that kind of dysfunction. So it feels like shutting Baker Mayfield down quiets the noise on a lot of different fronts. And low-key, probably gives your team a better chance to win football games, because it's apparent Baker Mayfield is not capable of being able to do it when he doesn't have the supporting cast in place, when he doesn't have Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt and that strong offensive line to lean on. Back-to-back performances that are lackluster, his two worst games of the season, it's about that time for the Cleveland Browns to make that decision.
Kenny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty giving you some truth. Yeah. On a Tuesday afternoon. What do you got, Debbie?
All right, last one. Chris, the Eagles will make the playoffs. True or false?
Hello! Jalen Hurts will make the playoffs. There ain't no question about it. You look at their remaining schedule, it ain't nothing but NFC East opponents. Only one date with Dallas at the end of the season, and the Cowboys might not even need that game in terms of their playoff implications, and then they've got the Jets sprinkled in there as well. So, yeah. The Philadelphia Eagles will make the playoffs, and it's going to be because of Jalen Hurts, not the passer, but Jalen Hurts, the runner, the guy that we saw rush for three touchdowns on Sunday against the New Orleans Saints, which was the number one run defense in the NFL coming into that game. They're the second-ranked rushing team in the National Football League, and they've got the most rushing touchdowns. So, yeah, the Eagles are going to ride that run game and that offensive line right into the postseason. It's sad to say this, Devin, but the Eagles are ahead of where the New York Giants are in their rebuild. It's a really sad state of affairs.
It's
truth.
I agree with you, Chris. I think this is the truth. I think the Eagles' soft schedule down the stretch has them perfectly situated for this. But I also think we're about to encounter an interesting force, because there are some coaches that are just better with that interim tag. And I think Freddie Kitchens might be one of them here. I would not be shocked if a resurgent Freddie Kitchens-led offense for the Giants gets the Eagles once down the stretch here and makes it a little uncomfortable for a while. Again, I think
one
overall,
week is all we need, baby.
That's it. That's it.
All the Eagles fans that work here, all I need is 1 week.
All you need is 1 week to hire Freddie Kitchens full-time as the offensive coordinator going forward, and then see exactly how it worked out when the Browns did that, making him the head coach from here on out. So, yeah, the Eagles got this one wrapped up here. I still don't know if I am bought into Jalen Hurts is the long answer, but I am bought into that team for this season, understanding who they are, finally, as Nick Sirianni remembered that running back room lives here. By the way, guys, reminder to tune into ESPN Daily, the podcast that brings you a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters. It's presented by Supercuts. Download, subscribe, and review ESPN Daily, available wherever you enjoy your podcast. Coming up next, We can try and tell you who's going to win the MVP in the NFL, but I can damn sure tell you who is not going to win that award. We will get that to you next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. College basketball is back. Tune in today for a semifinal round coverage of the Maui Gym Invitational beginning at 4:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. So, Gojo, we had overreaction Monday yesterday. A lot of people looking at what took place in the Week 11 slate. And one of the things that came out of it was the acknowledgement that Jonathan Taylor is one of the best players in the National Football League. I've been on that train for a couple of weeks now, but it seems like a lot of people are jumping on board as well. Another dominant performance, 185 yards rushing, over 200 yards from scrimmage, and 5 touchdowns. That performance will put you on the map, especially in a gotta-have-it game against the Buffalo Bills. But I think it's leading to some folks taking the conversation a little too far as it pertains to Jonathan Taylor and what potential postseason accolades he might be in line for.
Yeah, why do people have to do this? Like, I think I saw Dan Orlovsky and Ryan Clark talking about Jonathan Taylor winning the NFL MVP would not be an overreaction or him being a realistic candidate. Like, what are we doing? Did you guys not watch Derrick Henry the last 2 years? Like, you can't do much more for your team than win back-to-back rushing titles as basically the main source of offense in 2021. To do that as a running back is basically like resurrection. And somehow he's managed to pull that off. And yet somehow we're going to act like this is a realistic thing? Like, Chris, it's a quarterback award. We know it's a quarterback award. Why are we going to act like it's any different now?
I don't understand why people are doing that. But, I mean, Derrick Henry, to your point, has had the rushing title in back-to-back years. And in one of those seasons, had 2,141 yards from scrimmage. Like, that's what he did. And 17 touchdowns to go along with it. In the season before that, 18 touchdowns. Like, it's not like Derrick Henry hasn't been a beast at the running back position. So to think that Jonathan Taylor would have any better shot at being able to bring home the MVP award than Derrick Henry, you're beside yourself. Not to mention, at least Derrick Henry's team had a division title to speak of when we're talking about that. That doesn't seem like that's the path for the Indianapolis Colts in 2021. Now, we could be surprised going down the stretch. We acknowledge that the Titans had one of the easiest schedules down the stretch, but they also lost to the Houston Texans at home on Sunday. So I can't put anything past that group because it feels like that's a team that's reeling in the wake of Derrick Henry's injury. But when it comes to the Colts, it's a team that we absolutely expect to be in the playoff picture, but I don't know that there's enough that Jonathan Taylor can do to bring home the MVP award, even though we'll acknowledge that the MVP race is murky at best when you consider some of the names, just because the minute we're ready to anoint somebody and say that they should be the front runner, they're knocked off of that pedestal either by injury or their team dealing with an ugly loss. So it feels like it's a wide open field, but for quarterbacks, because we know how hard it is for running backs to win that award. The last time we saw a position player win that award was Adrian Peterson in 2012. And that was a year where the guy was averaging 144 yards from scrimmage during that year. Right now, Jonathan Taylor's at 131. So I'm not saying that the production isn't there. We just know MVP is a narrative-based award, and I'm not sure that Jonathan Taylor can do enough in terms of shaping the narrative around him in order to bring home the trophy.
Chris, it's hard to win MVP as a running back on a team where we know your offensive linemen's names, right? Like, yep. That kind of tells you, like, that is not a normal thing, and that is not something Derrick Henry really had to deal with. That's no shade to Taylor Lewan, who is a name O-lineman on that team, but he's a name in O-line communities. Quentin Nelson is a known name in football communities, and when you've got an offensive line that starts to get credit, that automatically undermines your running back's candidacy in all this. Because, Chris, you're right. The barrier to entry is so much harder for those guys. Quarterbacks at the MVP award, it's like a bad ex where I say, I'm done with him. I don't trust him anymore. How can I ever trust him again? Hey, what's up? Oh, okay, perfect. Ready to do this. You had a great performance at week 16. Let's give Aaron Rodgers another MVP. Let's throw Lamar Jackson back in this thing. Let's make it happen. It's not that we don't love running backs, Chris. It's just that we know what's real and what's not.
We do know what's real. We do know what's not. But the one thing I will say is, it's crazy to think that at 44 years old, Tom Brady might be talking about bringing home yet another MVP.
Yeah. We probably like do that, need
like
to start.
The guy is leading the NFL in touchdown passes, and he's top five in passer rating. Like, at some point, we're going to start having that conversation as the Buccaneers continue to move down the stretch in the second half, that Tom Brady deserves an opportunity to win MVP again. Like, that's going to happen. That conversation is going to get fired up pretty shortly here. All the Tampa Bay Buccaneers need to do is get back to their consistent winning ways. And I feel like last night could be the slump buster that this team was looking for over the course of the last 3 weeks.
They're going to have a couple of things that can really help you out in that cause if you're Tampa Bay. Because we know the MVP can kind of have that Heisman feel to it. Well, what's everyone looking for? Heisman moment. We want to see something crazy like that. Now, while Tom Brady's scramble for a first down last night, Chris, did seem like something that could qualify based on his skill set here. Watching Tom Brady, basically for his version of a hurdle someone towards a first down, was incredible. You could justify it off that alone, but he's going to have a game in early December against the Buffalo Bills, who we know probably won't win that division anymore, but are going to be a playoff team. Josh Allen and that crew still going to be contenders. And then they've got the next week, Sunday Night Football against the New Orleans Saints here. You got a primetime opportunity, Chris, that late in the season, that screams MVP moment for Tom Brady.
No doubt about it, but you're glossing over a game that we got to talk about with Jonathan Taylor and Tom Brady matching up this coming week in Week 12. Like, the Tampa Bay is on the road in Indy, so I think that would be one of those games in terms of MVP frontrunners. Like, this is going to continue the narrative for one of them that they belong in the MVP conversation, and undoubtedly the other one is probably going to get knocked down a peg. So I'm interested to see what happens. I feel like this is a game that Indy needs a lot more than Tampa needs. But, you know, in terms of looking at the actual matchup, I have a lot more trust in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers that they're going to be able to take care of their business, even though they're going to be on the road against the Colts.
This thing is all lining up for the results that we know. Tom Brady sniffing around here, flirting with the MVP, two straight losses, gets a win in primetime last night. Just start to mentally prepare yourselves for the conversations that are coming, because while we love Jonathan Taylor and we appreciate the work that running backs do, we know good and damn well it is going to take you basically moving a literal mountain for you to hoist that award. Coming up next, though, speaking of moving mountains, let's try and figure out what the best job currently available in college football is, and if we are this much closer to an uncomfortable conversation about one team's college football playoff chances. We'll get to that after we tell you about the man in the arena. And quite honestly, I feel like Chris Canty should be telling you about the man in the arena, because this guy, Chris, has been absolutely enthralled by this one here. If you have missed what Chris Canty's talking about, join host Gautam Chopra as he explores Tom Brady and what he's meant to the football world and the world at large in Man in the Arena. It's a new podcast from ESPN Plus and Religion of Sports. A companion piece to Gotham's ESPN Plus docuseries, it's a 10-part podcast that examines the improbable ripple effects of Tom Brady's career and how it has changed the way that we really look at everything around sports. The podcast is brought to you by State Farm, ZipRecruiter, and Rocket Mortgage. Listen and follow Man in the Arena on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and stream the docuseries on ESPN Plus. Let's talk to Ryan McGee next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
The countdown to Thanksgiving is on here at Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, we're presented by Progressive Insurance. We want to have you chime in on the conversation we've been having all show long about the worst Thanksgiving food takes. Hit us up on the Dr. Pepper line, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776, or the Dr. Pepper Twitter line, at Mike Golic Jr. and at ChrisCanty99. We'll get back to some of the takes we've gotten. But first, we're going to go out to the Goodyear hotline to bring on ESPN senior writer and co-host of Marty and McGee, Ryan McGee. And Ryan, we got to get to the news over the weekend. Florida decided that they were going to part ways with head coach Dan Mullen. And so we got to ask, with all the available coaching jobs in the landscape of college football, where does Florida rank in terms of coaching vacancies?
It's a great question. And by the way, I just drove past your old high school about 10 minutes ago, Charlotte.
I live
right around the corner. All right, so it is a great question, and I think the answer to that question has evolved, and not in a great way if you're a Florida fan. Because, and listen, you're talking to a Tennessee alum, and something that I've talked to athletic directors and potential coaches and all that over the years about is, you know, the hassle of the job now and the hassle of dealing with everything other than football is a huge factor when a potential coach looks at a job, no matter how much money there is, no matter what conference it is, all those things. And Florida right now is like Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade. When the dude drinks the water from the wrong cup and he ages like 500 years in 15 seconds, that's what Florida does to people now. You look at what these guys look like. It's like the pictures of the president, right? What they look like at the start of their time in the White House and what they look like when they're done. And it just sucks the life out of them. And so to answer your question, the resources are there. It's sitting in Florida. The recruiting base is there. The tradition is there. The trophies are there. But is the hassle and the fact that this job is so difficult, obviously emotionally, the question is how much of the pie chart is that? And I think a lot of people are starting to question if it's too much.
Ryan, would a lot of those same criticisms apply to the LSU job that's open right now and to the Southern Cal job that's open right now?
I think Southern Cal just doesn't have the success right now. You know, Florida, Florida came within arguably a handful of minutes of winning the SEC last year, would have been in the playoff. And so USC have anywhere near it. And I think that, you know, LSU obviously won a national championship a couple years ago, but there's always a lot of drama there. I think you know going to LSU, this is what you've always dealt with down there. It's just a little weird. It's the Bayou. It is what it is. You know, and there's just certain – at Auburn. You know when you go to Auburn, the soap opera is a big part of the job. But I think that the Florida part of this, the fact that that's a huge factor at Florida, I think people who've known have known, but I think the rest of us are catching up as to how difficult that job can actually be.
Ryan, so I'm just seeing this news breaking on Adam Schefter's Twitter account. Penn State and head coach James Franklin reached a new agreement, 10-year contract that keeps him with the program through 2031. And we've been seeing this around college football, Mel Tucker at Michigan State signing a huge contract extension a couple of weeks ago. How much of these coaching vacancies at these high-profile programs around college football are spurring some of these programs that like their head coach to make these contract extension offers to their incumbents?
Oh, no, man. The big winners are the guys whose names were already being connected to other jobs. And James Franklin, who, if you've ever been in a James Franklin press conference, and I've been in a bunch of them, he's always the first one to say, I want to talk about, you know, he'll go Michigan, 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 or Penn State, or he'll pit. He just wants to talk about the team coming up. And he admitted just in the last week that all of this has been a distraction. And the conversation has been more about, is James Franklin going to USC? Is he going to one of these other jobs? And so, yeah, going on and locking this down. And of course, everyone knows that doesn't mean he's not going to leave one day. But it certainly means that in the short term, he's going to be staying in Happy Valley. And yeah, it's ending that conversation at least temporarily. And even he admitted that was becoming a problem.
Ken Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio talking to ESPN college football writer Ryan McGee with us on the Goodyear Hotline. And again, according to Adam Schefter, Penn State and head coach James Franklin reaching a 10-year contract agreement that'll keep him with the Nittany Lions through the 2031 season. Now, Ryan, in what we've got coming up tonight, another round of the college football playoff rankings, and we know Michigan State took it on the chin before this. We know Oregon got dropped by Utah. So as we look at the rankings now, is this finally Bearcat season, a chance for Cincinnati to break the group of five ceiling and head into this top four?
If they keep them out now, they're never getting in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the schedule is what it is, and they got a big game coming up in the championship game and all that. That's great. But if they don't put them in now, then they're never going to do it. And I think the mentality of it has always been it's easier to leave them out now and put them in at the end than it is to have them in there and then pull them out at the last minute. Ask the folks, you know, down at TCU and Baylor about that deal going back a few years ago. So if they're not going to put them in now, they're never going to do it. So I think this is the week. But, yeah, it's going to be hard to keep them out of there. And I know a lot of people in that room. I have the greatest respect for the people who are in that room making these decisions. But, man, I was so angry at them because they kept Michigan ranked ahead of Michigan State, and then Michigan State went and completely did not back me up on any of that. So, thanks, Spartans.
Ryan, I got to ask you, since you mentioned the Spartans, man, the dominant performance by Ohio State and the close win that Alabama had against Arkansas, is it time for the committee to leapfrog Ohio State over Alabama for number two in the rankings?
I think so, and I've had it that way for a while now. I had Alabama actually out of the top four a couple weeks ago just because their losses were looking worse. You know, the Texas A&M loss was looking worse and worse every week. And I'll say this, no one sleep on Arkansas. This is not the Arkansas team that you think you've had for the last 10 years, that you have for the last 10. This is a good football team. But that being said, Ohio State – style points matter. I mean, they want to say they don't, but the reality is that's all anybody wants. I saw Nick Saban about this within the last couple of weeks, and he's like, man, it's not good enough to just win. You have to win it a certain way. And he wasn't talking about the committee. He was talking about the fan base, but he might as well have been talking about the committee. So, yeah, I think that this is the week that Ohio State makes the jump. And, look, all of this is going on, and no one in the top 10 they've all lost a game except for Georgia, and everyone in the top 25 has lost games and all this other stuff. And we're going to get to January, and it's going to be Ohio State and Georgia and Alabama, and the great programs are all going to sit right there. It's just going to have been a really weird road to get there.
It is a winding road that's ultimately probably going to give us the best offense in college football in Ohio State against the best defense in college football in Georgia, and I won't be mad about that for one single solitary second. Ryan, we have spent a lot of today, and I'm sure, listen, you and for anyone who hasn't listened to Marty and McGee on the SEC Network on ESPN Radio, you have missed out entirely and you need to fix your life, but I'm sure you guys have talked about some of the things that go on a Thanksgiving table here. We saw Matt Judon of the Patriots say that he hates mac and cheese. We saw Mac Jones, their quarterback, say that he doesn't mess with any of the pies on the Thanksgiving table. Is there a Thanksgiving take that Ryan McGee is hiding somewhere that he's not proud of?
Yeah, I'm not a collards guy. Like, I'm not a collard greens guy.
Whoa.
And now I know it. And listen, hey, Kenny, I am from Rockingham, North Carolina. I am from down east. And they don't eat breakfast without somebody pouring some oil on some collards. But for whatever reason, that particular strand in my McGee DNA, my dad right now, in fact, he will do this on Thursday when I'm with him. He will sit down with a bowl, like that cereal bowl from Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
I know what you're talking about.
He's just going to put his face down in them and go to town. That's going to be – but I just – and I respect it. I do. My grandmothers apparently were great collards aficionados and chefs. I just – that's just not – and I have family that won't speak to me about that, but that's how I roll. But anybody that says they don't like mac and cheese, I'm sure they can go celebrate some other holiday in Russia, because we don't have a seat for them in the United States.
No, I don't got not a seat at this table, not any time, not any place. That being said, Ryan McGee, always a seat at my Thanksgiving table.
You hurt me with that one, Ryan. I almost changed my answer.
Well, I can't reveal that I live right by your old high school and then say something like that, because you'll come find me. And so I almost changed my answer.
That's a big man.
But it's in here. But I own it. And again, I got cousins that won't even speak to me because of it.
Ryan, you're the best, man. We'll talk to you soon. Have a good Thanksgiving, buddy. Awesome stuff there. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. You can save big when you bundle your auto, home, motorcycle, RV, or boat. Visit progressive.com. Again, check out Marty McGee on the weekends here on ESPN Radio and read Ryan over at ESPN.com and on ESPN Plus. Coming up next, we talked about the big news of the day. Jason Garrett being let go by the New York Giants. The first of what could be multiple firings for the New York Giants and others as we get down this stretch of the season. But coming up next, we'll show you what going too far looks like when it comes to your team and the issues with a head coach next on ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear hotline. We want you to chime in on our conversation we've been having all show long about wild Thanksgiving food takes. We just had Ryan McGee on the Goodyear hotline, and he hurt me to my heart because he's talking about collard greens not being good. I don't understand how you could not like collard greens. I don't understand how you could not like mac and cheese. That's just me, Gojo. It bothers me, but I digress. I don't want to hijack the show with just those food takes. But there is something that we got to get to that happened over this weekend in Illinois. So, state playoff game against Lake Forest High School in Cary Grove. And I want to say Lake Forest caught the L, losing 40-7, but that's not the story. The story was the fans in the stands chanting, "Fire Matt Nagy." Why? Because two of Matt Nagy's sons played for Lake Forest High School. And so I think that those fans might actually be getting what they're looking for, because word on the street is that the Chicago Bears are poised to move on from Matt Nagy after their Thanksgiving game against the Detroit Lions. Now, Matt Nagy has since come out and denied the report that he had been informed that he would be fired after Thursday's game against the Detroit Lions, saying that the team has not spoken to that he has not spoken to team's leadership about his job status. But I'll say this, Gojo, where there's smoke, there's fire, and it feels like this is going to happen sooner rather than later, Matt Nagy being on the outs with the Chicago Bears.
I will also say this, Chris, if you were a person at that high school football game where Matt Nagy was as a father and you started that chant, you are a loser. You are a massive loser, and I have no respect for you whatsoever. I mean, come on. How I can understand being upset at the coaching job that goes on there, but the man's there to watch his kids play football. You're at a high school where I presume you're there to do the same thing, either cheer on a classmate or cheer on a loved one there, and that's how you want to spend your time. I got no respect for that. I understand we get all hot and bothered about these coaching things. Hell, we've been talking about the Giants all day letting go of Jason Garrett. But at some point, there's got to be some shred of decency left out there, man. This ain't watching the game at Soldier Field. This is a different atmosphere entirely, and to act like that's ridiculous.
No question about it. I completely agree with you when it comes to the adults in the room. But I got to say, Gojo, I'm pretty sure that Braden and Tate Nagy have heard that within the confines of their own high school with friends and maybe some people that they don't consider friends wanting their dad to be fired as head coach of the Chicago Bears. But that's just the temperature in the Chicago metro area when it comes to the status of their head coach, because it speaks to the job that Matt Nagy has done. And it feels like it's a fall far from grace given how this team was in the postseason just a year ago. But I think the lack of development at the quarterback position is what's ultimately going to lead to Matt Nagy's undoing.
Yeah, listen, there's no doubt this is the way I believe it is going. Ultimately, I think it's going to be in Chicago's best interest to do this. Andy Dalton is going to get the start on Thanksgiving for the Bears. Justin Fields exited that last game of injury. And I had a big problem with the fact that Matt Nagy came out, and when he was asked if Fields was healthy, would he start, was noncommittal. The way he's been noncommittal about Justin Fields' tenure for the majority of the time he's been in a Bears uniform this season. But I was thrown off by some of the names that we saw thrown out there for potential replacements, Chris. Because, again, I think you're getting pretty close to having to clean shop entirely there, whether it comes to the front office and the GM, whether it comes to your head coach here. But names that we've heard talked about in this, David Kaplan from Cap and Jay Hood on ESPN 1000 joined Keyshawn, Jay Will, and Max this morning, talking about Ryan Day as a potential candidate. Paul Feinbaum uttered Dan Mullen's name in all of this. Like, Chris, I understand that Ryan Day's a guy with pro ties, spent time with the Eagles and the 49ers. He could certainly end up there. But if the Bears hire Dan Bleepin' Mullen, I'm going to have a lot more questions about what's going on in Halas Hall.
Yeah, let me tell you what's not going to play well in the NFL locker room. A head coach that has the personality and that's done some of the antics that we've seen from Dan Mullen in his 4 years at Florida. That's not going to work when it comes to grown men. They're not going to buy into whatever path for success that he has or whatever he wants to do in terms of the elements of his program building. So that would be a tough sell, but if the Bears were to move into that direction, that would show just the lack of awareness that this franchise has in terms of being able to have success in the National Football League working with today's athletes. So that would be a fail, but I will say this. The first name that you mentioned, Ryan Day at Ohio State, look for that to start getting some legs here down the stretch, especially if Ohio State continues to have success and they find themselves in the college football playoffs. I actually talked to a prominent Ohio State football alum, and he has let it be known that Ryan Day absolutely fancies himself as an NFL coach and that it's only going to be about the right opportunity. And you could be talking about that right opportunity given his former quarterback being there in Justin Fields.
A lot to keep track of for the Chicago Bears head coaching job as we get down the stretch of this season. But coming up next, Monday Night Football gave us a different head coaching job to talk about. We'll head to New York next.